The day that Mike Lang entered this profession, the profession got richer. The day that Mike Lang exits the profession gets poorer. With that, we bring in the legendary Mike Lang. Mike, welcome. It's always a pleasure.
It's my pleasure, Steve. I've enjoyed the talks we've had, and I hope we can still continue along the way because I enjoy the show. I really do.
No, and we will absolutely continue to have you back. Mike, timing is everything in life, so let's start at least at the end here. What was right about the timing for you to say, all right, it's time now?
Well, I ran out of phrases, so I had to...
That's the best answer I've heard ever.
I think as many people are somewhat aware, I've been cutting back as far as the travel is concerned and doing games, the last couple of years. And we've gotten to the point now, especially with the COVID situation and everything involved, that I just thought, if I can get to this year, the 2021, and do a game, I'd have 50 years of doing pro hockey. Started with a stint in 1971 with the Phoenix Roadrunners in the Western League, and it would make 50 years, and I was able to accomplish that. And Steve Blass, who's a dear friend, and I did some baseball with him in the 80s, had just retired the year before, and we still stay so close. And being my hero, I decided to follow his footsteps. I just think it was the right time for me. We had so much success here over the years, and I just enjoyed everything I did with it. But I think it's time for a young guy to get his feet wet, and Josh Getzoff certainly will be doing that with Phil Bork. And I think we're in good hands, and I hope they can get a total of 50 years in themselves to enjoy what I was able to do here from the city of Pittsburgh.
Mike, along the way, when you get into this, mentors and people that either open doors for you in terms of their style or professionally or help you out or listen to what you're doing means so much. I mean, everyone knows, I've told everybody here, that Gil Santos, who for years did the Patriots, did Penn State for a few years, and I was the third guy. I learned so much just sitting there. Along the way, who is that kind of person for you? I mean, you have to be Mike Lang, but who is that person for you?
Well, I go back to really when I became really enthralled and was determined to be a broadcaster, and I was 9 years old. I just had it in my blood. That's what I wanted to do. Baseball was my choice at that time, and the San Francisco Giants had just moved west from New York, and listening to their broadcast and the great voice of Vince Scully when they arrived and became a part of the West Coast just piqued my interest so much. Another guy there who really probably had as much influence as anything would be Bill King, who did the San Francisco Warriors and used a great phrase in the Raiders of the American Football League and used a phrase, "Holy Toledo," and every time he did that, I just had chills go down my back in the moment of the game. And I said to myself even then, I said, I'm going to try and do some phrases. I want to do something if I get into it. And that's where it was kind of born. And then my first job, as it turned out, turned out to be in Phoenix, Arizona. And I couldn't have been a better place for me to start because Al McCoy, who is still the most tenured broadcaster in the NBA, was there doing the hockey games, and I ended up actually getting a job working with him for the last half of the season in 71, and then he went to the Phoenix Suns, and when he did, I was able to move in and become a play-by-play broadcaster. He taught me so much about broadcasting, particularly, you have to realize, and you and I are a little fortunate in getting our feet wet and so much the radio side of it. But that's all there was at that time, radio. Mm-hmm. So you had to be pretty descriptive and be able to use your craft to convey what was going on. And so he taught me so much about how to do that and made me a better broadcaster. And then I was able to work my way. I thought I was going to go to San Diego my whole life. Got a job there in 73 doing hockey there with the Western Hockey League. And I thought that I would be there hopefully for baseball, too, to be a greedy guy and do both sports. Right. But it didn't turn out that way. The World Hockey moved in, and that league went defunct, and I ended up trying to get a job, and I ended up in Pittsburgh. So It was a different trip for a guy that was a native Californian, five generation. Everybody's back home still. I was the only one that ended up taking a covered wagon and going the other way.
So what was it? What kind of adjustment was it? Now, you're in the NHL, so you're one of the few that are in the NHL back in the 70s. I mean, there's only, as you and I know, a limited number of jobs.
Yep.
What kind of adjustment was it for a Sacramento guy to then suddenly get to Pittsburgh?
Well, it's interesting you say that, and I think you could probably relate to at times on major sports that you eventually moved up the ladder and called important games. Now, that was the biggest jump for me. I had a goal to be in the major leagues. Now, it didn't necessarily mean it was going to be hockey by the time I was 26. Well, I accomplished that, but the first game, obviously, was on KDKA radio, 50,000-watt clear channel. You're aware of that.
Yeah.
And you're going by yourself, and I'm going to the Met Center in Bloomington, Minnesota, and I'm all by myself except for an engineer, which we never had, you know, in the minor leagues. And I settle in, and I'm nervous as can be, and I get the job, and I start working the game, and it's going fairly well. And all of a sudden, it became a little smoother. We win the game, which probably was a blessing for me because I was able to kind of feel more comfortable. And then when it was done, I went back to the hotel, and I sat down and said, you know, it really wasn't that much different from where I was. And with that attitude, I moved in, and it became a lot more comfortable. And I built from there. You know, we all do. We learn from experience and built it into something and moved it forward and added a couple of phrases. And then the fans started responding crazily and sending me things and wanting to know about, can I use this phrase and that phrase? And so it kind of built from there as far as the relationship with fans. So that's where it all started. And hopefully they had a good journey with me, and they know, the fans do, and everybody that listened over the years, how much fun I had. And I hope they had the same amount of fun, and they were smiling at the time.
Oh, believe me, they were. All of us. Everybody. Early in your tenure, though, the Penguins as a franchise were not the most stable of groups and organizations. How tough was it to always hear the rumors about whether they were staying in Pittsburgh or not?
You know, that's amazing, really. It's a good question because most people would, well, I'll give you just a quick example. The first year I was here, I worked 1 year, and at the end of May of that year, Jack Button, who was the general manager, brought us into the Igloo Club, the private club, and he said, as of tomorrow, everybody, you're all unemployed. And well, what do you mean? We're all unemployed. The team had gone bankrupt. And so that opened, you know, the scramble was on. I ended up going back to San Diego for 1 year. And then the guy that replaced me, Gary Morrell, left after 1 year. And I came back and have been here ever since. But once I came back, I just felt such a feel back to the city and want to succeed and keep it going. So it was kind of an impetus for me to say, okay, we'll show you what we can do. And that those years, the Steelers, you got to realize, it just won a Super Bowl. They won four. The Pirates won in 79. And Pitt won a national championship in 1976. So we were the blue and white down at the bottom of the totem pole. So it gave me another little bit of incentive to want to try and move up the ladder and make it a major sport in the city of Pittsburgh. And it was slow, grinding, frustrating, no question, but it was all worthwhile, especially with the arrival of number 66, Mario Lemieux, who really gave the team the kick in the pants, if you will, to get over that edge and become a better hockey club and go on to the success that they've had. So it was fun for me. I learned very quickly on. There's another team on the other side, and they've got a lot of good stars. They got good people. The Canadians, a lot of it. So I would build them up. You got to come and see these guys play. I mean, they're that good. So you use whatever is at your table, yep, and work with it. Try and create interest, and I think we succeeded in some way, yeah, to making people want to see the game of hockey itself.
Don't I know it? Don't I know it? So now I opened up, my first question was about timing. being the end. Now, life is also timing when it comes to other events. You mentioned Mario Lemieux. That literally was going to be my next question anyway, so you anticipated me perfectly, Mike.
Yeah.
But when he gets there, okay, what, you know, the impact he had, not just on the fan, the game, but what the kind of impact he had for you as the broadcaster, that you were, you on an everyday basis were seeing something special.
Well, I knew he was going to be somewhat special. This is a kind of a story on the Pirates, but that first year we had training camp at Mount Lebanon High School here in Pittsburgh, and it had a small rink. The players were going 2-3 times a day in those years with two-a-day workouts, and then we had a black and gold because we had changed the colors in the last Super Bowl. Anyway, within the team, they had a game at this arena. So it's in a suburb, and it doesn't hold a lot of people. And that night, there were approximately 3,000 people that came down to try and get into that building to see Mario play on that first night. On the same night, the Cubs had a chance to clinch with it, the National League Division Championship, and they were playing the Pirates, and at Three River Stadium, they had 3,200, I believe, for that game, if not less.
Mm.
So it was an amazing thing to see. And as usual, you know, some energizing person within the township of Mount Lebanon saw all these cars and parked and people try to get in. And they went through and put tickets on all the cars that were parked there. They had to come back to their cars as mad as hell. But they survived it. And the rest is kind of history of what he has accomplished, you know, not only in his early years and the Cups, but as an owner, too, and being a great part of this community and always dedicated his life to.
Yeah, obviously, then, of course, Sid comes in, and there's three more Stanley Cups, as we all know. You did a lot of time between TV, radio. In the end, what was the passion for you? Was the passion being on TV, or was the passion for you being the radio guy, in retrospect?
Well, quite honestly, I had the advantage of both, because from 82, I think, on, until we officially made a change of the radio and the TV together as simulcast. So I did those games all as simulcast, so I could probably lean more on the radio side with a little more description while I was doing the TV, but I didn't get any big complaints about it. But in 93, because of the satellites and the difference in the timing, and, you know, everything else used to be on landlines, as you well know, Steve, until the advent of the satellite. And then it became almost prohibitive because of the delays. And so I stayed on television. They decided to make a change on the TV side, Fox did. And I went back to the radio. And the blessing in disguise of it all is that I got to call every game of every playoff game and the three cups after that that the Penguins won. So I've done every game they've done in winning cups. I've been able to broadcast it. If I'd been on the TV side only, I wouldn't have done those games for the last three championships. So it was rewarding to me, and I love the radio. And I had a great partner in Phil Bourque. I love him to death. He's one of the better color men, I think, in the NHL.
Yep.
He works so hard at his new job, if you will. He's become seasoned. He's become comical. He's become good with timing. He's got all the whole package right now, and he's in demand among people around here, and rightly so. So it's been fun, really, kind of moving along with him. But I do think it's time, and I put 50 years in, and I think that's a pretty good pace for anybody that's carried his bags for that long. And been able to do what he just really loved to do.
Well, I know the feeling because, of course, I get to work side by side with Jack Ham. So,
yep, absolutely.
I know how you feel. I mean, it's invaluable to have somebody that knowledgeable next to you, And it's invaluable to have somebody who has a great personality like that next to you. And you obviously had that with Phil, which is just, I mean, that's
gold. Yeah, they're just good people, and they're humble.
Yeah.
And the way, this is why I love Pittsburgh so much, and I grew up in California, and I think, but your humbleness really is your greatest asset. If you can do that and be good at something, boy, it's just so much easier to communicate with people. Yep. And, you know, a lot of those Steelers in those early years, I met a lot of them, are just so down to earth and such great people. And it's easy to see why they related to each other. And it warms my heart to see the success that they've had. And I'm not surprised Jack Ham is a terrific broadcaster. And anything he would do, I think he'd be successful.
Well, I'll end the way I started. The profession became richer the day you entered it. It became poorer the day you decided not to do any more games. Mike, we will do this many more times. This won't be the last time we talk because I thoroughly enjoy talking with you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything and for all the great moments all of us listened out of your voice.
Hey, and I said the people have given me everything back, too, with the accolades or the thought of watching and listening to games night after night. I just tell them, you know, whatever you do, keep smiling like a butcher's dog. And it's official. Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.